Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome back to the program today Olin Steinauer. His new book is The Cairo Affair. He joins us by telephone from somewhere in New York State. Hello, Olin.
Hi there. Thanks for having me back, Vic.
Olin, how did it feel this morning to wake up, and I know you knew this was coming, but you open the New York Times and you see what I can only characterize as a rave review of this new book.
It was pretty outstanding. Janet Maslin, I don't know. I just, you know, I try to be humble, so it's I just call it generosity on her part. But I was really pleased. I mean, you write a book, you spend so long on it, and this book, Cairo Affair, was an extremely difficult one to do. It went through so many versions, and to find someone who just clicks with it and really appreciates it for what it is, you know, that's just a great feeling.
I read it and I said, man, he must be on cloud nine.
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely.
Because, you know, she's not as tough as Michiko, but she can be tough.
Yeah, that's true. She's reviewed a couple of my other books. And what I found interesting in that review, she liked my other books, but I liked the way she was able to criticize the Tourist trilogy. And it's an interesting and very legitimate criticism that progressively the three books got so complex that it was sort of impossible to keep track of, you know, the plot lines, the conspiracies, and all the characters. And in a way, that's why I didn't write a fourth Milo book, because I had reached the point where, I don't know, I was about going crazy trying to keep track of it all myself. And eventually I will write a fourth Milo book, maybe more, we'll see. But I really needed a break from that, which is why I ended up writing The Cairo Affair.
Well, you just made my day when you said that we're not done with Milo. I know what she means, though. In that third book in the Milo Weaver slash Tourist series, we disappear in China and Milo just kind of, he's like gone.
Right, right. In a way, he becomes less a main character in that one. You know, he comes in, he has his things, but I realized I'd spent so long dealing with China as an outside force that I thought it would be really interesting just to sit down in China and get everything from the other side and just stick with that for a while, to the point that hopefully, you know, a reader could care about those characters and actually be invested in them winning in some way. And I was pleased. I can understand some people didn't like all the Chinese names, I noticed. Mm. but there's no getting around that.
Well, yeah, but if we were Chinese, they probably wouldn't seem strange to us, would they?
We'd
remember them all, but they're just sort of alien to us to read them and think, well, I can't keep track of who's who.
Yeah, right. Yeah. No, it is hard. It is hard. I was trying to find ways around that, but I was thinking of people with sort of Chinese ancestry looking at it, and I didn't want to skimp on the names. I always worry about that, particularly when I'm writing, you know, things set in Eastern Europe, because I spend half my time in Hungary, you know, and I worry that people are going to be maybe take offense, but not so much take offense as to feel like I've given the culture short shrift because I'm an American. I don't want to, you know, keep going with these stereotypes of Americans being too insular and not being interested in the outside world.
Olin Steinauer joins us. His new novel is The Cairo Affair. When we began our conversation, you indicated that this was a tough book to write. How so?
I was working on The Cairo Affair. I started working on it when the Arab Spring was in full swing. I started writing when the plot takes place. And all I knew is I was watching television and I thought, oh, I want to write about this. But that was my only guideline. Mm-hmm. So I started writing. And some of these characters were in the original draft, not all of them. But it was a whole different story going on. A lot of it had to do with a brother, a missing brother of Sophie Cole, one of the main characters in the book, rather than her husband. And it sort of went into arms dealing and things like that. And I went through so many drafts and for so long that I was ready to give up on it. It's probably 9 months into working on it. It simply wasn't working. So I had to throw away about half of what I had and then start fresh with the pieces that I had left over. And finally it clicked. This is one of the problems of writing without an outline, as I do, is that it's so easy to make mistakes and not discover them until you've written 200, 300 pages. And I don't know, if I was able to outline, I would, but it's just not how my mind works.
So you were forced to jettison a lot of that. Because you liked the freedom of working without an outline, you had to just go right back in and completely recreate the story.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes I find I'll write most of a novel, realize it doesn't work, and then I have to finally make an outline. But it's an outline of what's already been written, so I can see it on just a few pages and see exactly the structure that's there. And, I don't know, in the end it works. It just takes me longer, I think, than some writers.
Well, I applaud Janet Maslin. I read her review, and I will never read a review if I'm actually planning on reading a book until after I've read the book, and then I'll say, okay, that's a spoiler.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I thought she did a pretty good job of skirting around spoiling things. Tell our listeners, without throwing out any spoilers, what this story is about.
Well, it's about a lot of things, actually. The central thrust of the story deals with Sophie Cole. She's the wife of an American diplomat in Budapest. And over the previous years, they've been posted in different cities, Paris and Cairo, before coming to Budapest. And in a way, Budapest is a relaxing place for them compared to Cairo. Mm-hmm. And they were in Cairo under Mubarak. So they're in Budapest as Mubarak has been overthrown. And they're eating dinner in a French restaurant, and her husband, Emmett, accuses her of having had an affair back in Cairo. She admits to the affair, and they talk about this, and then a man shows up, an Albanian hitman, it turns out, and shoots her husband in the head. So there's your inciting event.
Uh-huh.
And it slowly spreads out from that, and she decides, rather than take her husband's body home to Boston and bury him, she decides to go to Cairo and find out what she can. Because she believes not only that the reason for what happened lies in Cairo, but the blame for what happened lies in part on her, and perhaps entirely on her. And as the novel goes on, you start to see what she means by this. She's a much more complicated character than she initially appears. It also brings in other characters. There is her ex-lover, who was brought up in the conversation, Stan. He works for the CIA out of Cairo. There's John Calhoun. He's a contractor, CIA contractor, working also out of Cairo. And there's also Omar Halawi, who works for Egyptian intelligence. And all of them sort of come together around this murder and a plan for regime change in Libya called Stumbler. And I don't know, whenever I describe one of my stories, I always think, there's how on earth can you piece all these things together? And that's usually why it ends up taking me so damn long to write a book.
Mm. Olin Steinhauer joins us. His new one is The Cairo Affair. Did you mention this poor schmuck who goes out with the contractor into the desert? Did you mention?
Oh, right. No, okay. I didn't mention him.
Okay.
Yeah, he's important to it. He's a CIA analyst who actually drafted this plan for regime change called Stumbler, and he believes that someone is putting it into motion. He's told the CIA is not doing it, but he's not sure he believes his bosses, and he's trying to find proof of who is trying to change the regime, or is trying to overthrow Gaddafi in Libya. And this is actually crucial sort of for the moral foundation of the novel, because you have he's a Libyan-American analyst. He came up with a plan to overthrow Gaddafi. And then when he thinks that it's actually being used, you know, years after he drafted it, he's angry. And the question comes up, well, why are you angry? This is your plan. And he's angry because at that moment, there's a popular revolution going on. And he believes that Stumbler, this plan, would have worked wonderfully some years ago when there was no active opposition to Gaddafi. But now that the masses are rising up, it becomes an entirely different plan. It becomes a way for a foreign power to hijack the revolution. So the moral equation changes based on news events, in a way. And I found that sort of interesting as I was developing the story, and that contradiction, or you know, or that specificity of a situation and its moral qualities changes. I don't know. It was good.
Not that the CIA would ever manipulate a regime change.
That's why the whole idea is ridiculous, and that's why it's a comedy.
Good point.
Yeah.
Oleg Steinauer joins us. I don't think you mentioned my favorite character, this Serb woman.
Oh, of course.
I love her.
That's great. No, that's Zora. Uh-huh. Zora Balashevich. And Balashevich is actually the last name of a very famous Serbian singer. I took that name just because I know his music, and it's really quite nice. And I was hunting for a name. I really like her, too. I'm married to a Serb, by the way, but she is nothing like Zora.
I hope not.
Zora is entirely a fabrication, but based on various people I've met. We first meet her in 1991 when Sophie and Emmett are on their honeymoon. And oddly enough, for various reasons, they decide to go to Yugoslavia, which is just starting to break apart at that point. And they run into Zora, and Zora is nationalist and ready to fight. And she sort of convinces them that they're seeing the world in a childish way, and they need to let go of childish things. They need to find real passion in their life, something to believe in. And it goes bad. And it's that event in 1991 that has repercussions throughout the next 20 years. And when we see her again in Cairo, you see how she has changed with world events. Yugoslavia no longer exists. It's Serbia. It's all these smaller nation states. And she's also changed, and I think become maybe more interesting.
I think that road trip with Zora is one of the most ominous and disturbing things to read.
Thank you.
I mean, that was creepy.
Well, I was really pleased with that, partly because, you know, in 1991 I didn't take that road, so I wrote the whole thing. And you'll see at the beginning of the book, I thank Mark Milstein for checking on this section. But I wrote it without any input from him. I wrote it, and then I know this guy, Mark, he's a photojournalist. And during that period, he was all throughout that area. He was popped into a Serbian jail at one point. It was a very interesting life. And so I said, okay, can you look at this? Just tell me what doesn't ring true. You know, mark it up. And it was, I don't know, sometimes it's dumb luck. Sometimes it's, you know, just the magic of imagination. Is he said, don't change a thing. It's absolutely right. It's exactly how it was. So I sort of lucked out on that, maybe.
Well, that was fun to read.
Glad you liked it. I like to hear that.
And I'm not a big fan of gore, but when you start the book off with them in the restaurant and then this guy coming in and just plugging the husband, I did enjoy that a little bit.
Good.
You really started off with a bang.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't use. I mean, I try to stay away from sort of the cliches of starting off with a bang. I mean, that's it's such a gimme. It's such an obvious thing to do. But in that case, I was piecing together very before that happens. You get a flashback to 1991. You get a scene in at Langley. This Yabril Aziz finding out about Stumbler, and I wanted suddenly everything to kind of come together hard, and that's how it worked. So,
and we would think that this woman who's now widowed would be sort of a pathetic character, but the thing is, we can't figure out what she is, and we can't figure out what Stan is, and this Egyptian operative, and all these other people. It's such a wilderness of mirrors, to use another cliche.
Right, yeah.
We don't know who's the bad guy, what government they represent, who's a double agent. We just don't know.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's, I don't know, it's, I mean, to me, that's why, that's part of the reason I write in the spy genre. It's when you meet someone on the street or in your life, all they are is a face, and you have to slowly put together the evidence over time to figure out what kind of person they are. And to me, that's, you know, these spy stories where people are, they have one face, but that's hiding another. To me, in a way, that's it's just a playoff on how we all live. And I'm not trying to make a big theme out of it necessarily, but I think this is why I write this kind of story. It fascinates me, the mirrors that are constantly being refracted and refracting what we see.
Mm-hmm. Owen Steinauer joins us. His new novel is The Cairo Affair. Are you back in Budapest again?
No, right now I'm in New York.
But I mean, are you living in Budapest again?
Well, you know, it's a simple question. It should have a simple answer.
Okay.
Right now, we're trying out living in New York. We still have our place in Budapest with all our stuff in it. But a couple years ago, we tried living in California and decided against it by the end. But so now we're trying out New York. It's really because of my daughter. You know, you have a child getting to school age, and you have to make decisions where, you know, where should they go to school? Where should they grow up? And America is a place that I understand.
Mm.
I love it and I hate it as much as anyone loves and hates their own country, but I understand it. Hungary is a place that my wife and I are not from. And so that's a place where we were always an outsider. And I think I would like my daughter living in a place where her parents are not outsiders.
Mm-hmm.
Parents are sort of connected and really understand what's going on. I mean, the basic analogy that I, when people ask me in Budapest, why are you moving to America, was, you know, if my child in school in Hungary and they start teaching her creationism instead of evolution, I don't know who to complain to.
Uh-huh.
In America, I know who to complain to about this and get some results.
Well, I guess I seem to recall, didn't you review the most recent Jean Le Carré for the New
York
Times?
Yeah,
and I think
it
said that you lived in Budapest in that review.
Yeah, well, at
okay.
that point, I
gotcha.
Still was. I think I wrote it in Budapest. We just came last summer.
Okay, I got gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, you're like some of your characters. We don't know where you are.
I kind of like it, though.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, people always ask. I mean, these social services like Foursquare, that terrifies me.
Uh-huh.
The idea that strangers can know where I am at any point, it's horrifying.
That is horrifying.
It really is.
I always wonder about that.
Yeah.
Because you'll go on social media and someone will be telling you exactly where they are so you can throw the bomb through the window.
Exactly. No, and I mean, I think it's a generational thing. I have a younger sister, you know, and on Facebook she puts kind of like all the most personal things, and I wonder, why, God, why are you doing that? It's, who knows who's out there? Or maybe, you know, maybe I'm just paranoid.
Well,
that's kept me alive so far.
It makes me think that my late mother was somewhat visionary, because whenever she would leave the house, she would create an elaborate new message on her answer machine telling any potential burglar exactly where she was going to be and when she would be home.
That's hilarious.
That was just the way she was.
Wow. Speaking
of Facebook, I looked at your page this morning. That streamer photo you have on the top with the – it looks like a Citroën. Beautiful car. Is that taken in France? Where's that photo taken?
The picture with the Citroën, that is actually down the street in Budapest from where I live.
That's a beautiful photo.
Citroën shot it, and it was great. It's great looking. I took it many years ago, but I keep popping it up on various web pages I've had throughout the years.
That's a classic, and of course. Going on Facebook, I saw that you have another book coming out, and it's already in bed. And this sounds like a real departure for you. Tell us about this book. Is it going to be called All the Old Knives?
Exactly. Yeah, it's this was back in California, so we're talking a couple of years ago. The TV was on, and I saw this Alan Rickman and Emma Thompson were in this dramatization of a poem called The Song of Lunch by Christopher Reed, a British poet. And it was absolutely mesmerizing. I mean, really, any time you put those two actors on a screen, I'm going to be mesmerized anyway. But it's this beautiful and kind of, in a way, horrible evocation of a man who's past his prime sitting down with his ex-lover, who's now married and very successful. And he's still in love with her. He's still pining for her. And I thought, wow, I would love to write a novel over dinner, over a meal, and have it be a spy novel. Mm. And so I sort of took that challenge, and I think I just scribbled some notes here and there. And then later on that summer, we were in Novi Sad, Serbia. We're visiting with in-laws, and it was terribly hot. And I sat down and I said, oh, I think I can write this story now. And in the space of a month, in that hot little room, I wrote the novel. Now, that's an achievement for me, writing anything in a month.
Wow.
But a caveat is that it is half the length. It's like 50,000 words, whereas my novels are usually 100,000 words. But it still works as a complete novel, just a shorter one. And it's as I originally planned. It takes place over dinner in a restaurant in Carmel, California. And a man who's still working for the CIA in Vienna has come to meet his ex-lover, who's now married, living in California, and is retired from CIA. But, of course, it's more complicated than that. Mm-hmm. He's investigating a possible leak from the embassy from 6 years before, when a terrorist event happened at the Vienna airport. It's some huge tragedy for the embassy, and someone is digging up that case again, and he's been assigned to do the final investigation into it, whether or not there was a leak. And it gets progressively more, it's one of the more horrible dinners in literature, probably. and it ends not with a bang, but a whimper, in a way. I just finished going through the very final edits, and I'm really pleased with it. It's a departure, but in a way, not entirely. It's just something fresh, I think.
Well, I was happy to see your post, because I thought, good, I can actually talk to him about this book.
Right, yeah. Now it's out. Well, it's out in the ether, at least.
Probably another year on that one, huh?
Yeah. This is publishing schedules.
Well, after I read your post, I tried to find the video, which I have not seen, the one with Emma Thompson. And then I thought, okay, well, I can't access that. It wouldn't let me watch it. But then I downloaded the poem, The Song of Lunch. What an elegant poem.
Oh, it's beautiful. And that's the text of it. The story, if I remember right, the dramatization is literally Alan Rickman saying all those words right there while they're acting it out. Yet it seems there's nothing forced about it. It's the production is so elegantly done, and it's and it's great. It's extremely emotional.
I'm going to have to track that one down in the ether, so to speak.
Yeah, I think I ended up, because when I saw it on TV, I only caught the last half of it. So I did an iTunes thing, so I got it off of there.
Olin Steinhauer joins us. His new novel is The Cairo Affair, just being published by Minotaur. And we also just heard about his next book, which will be coming out. And we heard a little bit about his tourist series, which I am so grateful that you're considering writing another book, because I really like Milo a lot.
Great. Thanks. No, I tried. You know, I didn't entirely give up when I was trying to write. I made an attempt at writing a fourth one. It's just that it just wasn't very good. Everything I came up with was not working. And so I decided to, you know, okay, clean the table, start again, start on something new. And so what I have is Cairo Affair, which is a standalone, then All the Old Knives, which is a standalone. And I've been working on another novel, which would also be a standalone, which is called, the working title is Tatters, and it's also a departure, partly because I'm the main character.
Really?
Olin Steinhauer is the main character, and I'm not trying to play too much with the metafictional stuff, but I thought it would be interesting to try this out, and it actually deals with sort of homegrown terrorism. Left-wing terrorism, though, not right-wing, and which is something I've always been interested in, from the 60s and 70s. It's kind of a reimagining of such a movement now. And, you know, it's as messy as any of the other novels, with enough blood to spread around. But I'm like maybe one-third through that. It's going to be a while till I finish that.
Well, you really are taking a good little break from the tourist series, so by the time you get around to writing another one, you'll probably feel completely refreshed and ready to dive in.
Yeah, and actually, you know, I've been thinking that the way I should treat the tourist series is to come back to it every some years and write trilogies. That's one idea, and that's really inspired by Lynn Dayton and his Bernard Sampson sequence from the 80s, and he essentially did three trilogies in a row. He wrote them end on end. I would wait between the trilogies. I kept revisiting and revisiting.
Yeah.
So it's a 9-book sequence, and I think there's one or two more added to it. And those are brilliant. Those are fantastic. They were part of, you know, the literature I was reading before sitting down to The Tourist. That and, of course, Le Carre.
Well, it's really been a pleasure to have you back on the program.
It's been a pleasure to be here. Thank you, Vic.
Our guest has been Olin Steinhauer. His new novel is The Cairo Affair. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McKeonis. Thanks for listening. The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.